If you are tired of trying to figure out this training stuff by yourself and you want specific instructions on what to do in the gym, on the wall, and in the weight room in order to get stronger at bouldering or root climbing, we have online programs that are affordable and they give you everything you need to have high quality sessions so that you get stronger. You can find both of those programs on trainingbeta.com. The root program is at trainingbeta.com/roots, and the bouldering program is at trainingbeta.com/bouldering. Check it out. We've had thousands of people use these programs with tons of success, and we hope that you have the same success with it. trainingbeta.com/roots or bouldering. This is the Training Beta Podcast, and I'm your host, Neely Quinn. Thanks for joining me for another episode all about rock climbing and training for rock climbing. Today's episode is with Dr. Tyler Nelson, who has been on the show, I just counted, 12 times. This is his 13th time. Lucky 13. So I thought I would take a minute here to just reintroduce Tyler in case you have never heard of him or you haven't heard him on the podcast. But he's talked about so many things, tons of finger training and finger strength episodes, high volume power training, stretching for climbing, injury rehab. He has talked about a ton of stuff. So in the show notes, I put in all of his other episodes if you're interested in any of those. So who is Tyler? Tyler owns and operates Camp for Human Performance, which is a chiropractic sports medicine clinic and strength and conditioning business in Salt Lake City. He's really well known on Instagram in the climbing community, and his name is at C4HP. So like it stands for Camp for Human Performance. He does a ton of stuff on Instagram that's very educational. He is way into researching and studying the research about training for climbing and injuries and all of it for us. So he's pretty cutting edge. He got his doctoral degree as a chiropractor, but also completed a dual program master's degree in exercise science. So he's also a certified strength and conditioning specialist. And he also is a father of four children and a really avid boulderer himself. So he's psyched on this information. And recently, and he's going to tell you about this, but recently he spent a bunch of time and money working with this guy, Chris Beardsley, talking to him about new insights on finger strength training, or just basically strength training, which he then applied to finger strength. So I'm not going to try to explain what he's about to explain. All I'm going to say is that he has had some new thoughts about the limitations of using the fingerboard as our main source of finger strength training. So without further ado, here is Dr. Tyler Nelson, and I'll talk to you on the other side. Enjoy. All right, welcome back to the show, Tyler. How are you doing?
Thank you. All is well, thanks.
Yeah.
Trying to not get overly hot in Utah. It's really hot right now.
Oh, hundreds, 90s?
Easily hundreds for the last month and a half.
Oh, wow. It's the new Vegas down there, because Vegas is like 90s.
Oh, for real? It's not over 100?
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. I'm not there. That's just what I'm hearing.
Oh, where are you now?
I'm in Colorado at my Colorado house.
Sweet. And
it's lovely here.
That's the move.
Yeah. So we have 46 minutes until your next client, I think. And so you told me that we're going to talk about something really exciting today. And I sort of understood what you were saying, but I want you to just tell us, what are we talking about?
Yeah, so it's kind of a better and more physiological understanding of fingerboarding protocols and, you know, how we can do so much weight with those and how they might not really transfer to the rock climbing wall.
Okay, which is going to be really disappointing for a lot of people.
I mean, any new idea like that with people's habits are for sure to get some pushback, but from the physiology standpoint, it makes sense. And so it doesn't mean that they're worthless by any means, but it means that they certainly have their limitations.
Okay. Yeah, and since you brought this topic up to me, every time I've been on my hangboard, I've been like, is this actually doing what I want it to do? But so tell us, like, what are the main concerns here? What is it not doing that we might think it's doing?
So it does a lot of things. And so let's assume that someone's relatively new to climbing training and they've been climbing and they're plateauing with their finger strength in the gym and they want to increase that finger strength. In that case, using a fingerboard regularly for that athlete is probably enough to make their fingers stronger, because fingerboarding certainly will increase someone's like motor unit recruitment, the big muscle fibers, it will do that. But for athletes that have been training for a long time, once they get really high in those levels of recruitment, eccentric training, which is what we do on a fingerboard, isn't giving them more recruitment.
Okay, tell me that in like I'm a kindergartner.
So when you hang on a fingerboard at say at body weight, at some time within maybe a couple weeks or months, you're going to plateau in the level of recruitment you use on the board. So that's as many muscle fibers as you can activate. But if you start adding weight to your body, you can get some more. But at some point adding weight, I plateau in the number that I can actually get. And anything beyond that is efficiency in your muscle, which is mostly something we'll say is passive tension. So it's just loading your connective tissues, but not really activating more muscle fibers.
Okay. So in climbing terms, like, why does this matter?
Perfect. So in climbing terms, it matters because we spend a lot of time and a lot of energy and a lot of like both mental energy, but physical energy, worried about increasing our strength. But if we're doing so much more load beyond which we could actually use on the climbing wall, we're kind of wasting our time.
Okay. And like what, so what I heard you say in our initial conversation about this basically is like, okay, you can hang, but can you move off of that hanging place position, right?
Well, the moving off of it is important when we're being dynamic, but I'll just give you an example. It'll be way easier for people to think about. And so if we use like finger numbers, because we've talked about finger testing before multiple times on the podcast. Yeah. And so if we look at like my finger pull numbers, if I'm sitting on the ground and I'm pulling on an edge, on a 20 millimeter edge with my whole upper extremity, my numbers are like 185 pounds per hand, which is 20 pounds greater than my body weight with one arm per hand. Yeah.
That's really good. Or maybe it's not.
It's probably above average, but it's not elite level like Allison's fingers, but it's strong. It's plenty strong it's stronger than the grades I'm climbing for sure. But if I measure my fingers and I isolate my finger flexors, either putting my elbow flat on a table and pulling down, so I eliminate my big pulling muscles, or if I'm standing pulling upwards with my feet and my knee, with my elbows and my knees locked out, my forces are only 111 pounds of force. Mm. So the difference there is muscle activation versus passive tension. And so when I'm pulling on my fingers only, that's more of a direct reflection of my motor unit recruitment when I'm actually only relying on my muscles. But when I'm using the fingerboard and I'm hanging, it's that load plus a bunch of extra load, which is passive tension. But as soon as I remove that extra load, the adaptation goes away.
Okay. So how does this affect climbing?
So if I was going to do a two-arm hang protocol, I think my extra weight was like 168 pounds, which I could do on a 20-mil edge. Or I could hang on a 20-mil edge with extra 30 pounds in my hand, 20 to 30 pounds in my hand. But I'm never going to use that much load on the climbing wall, ever, because my feet are on, my other hand's on, right? And so when it comes to the things that we expect to get out of finger training protocols, we put way too much emphasis on the things that we should get out of them when they won't ever transfer to the climbing wall because we're never getting that extra external load.
Okay.
Are you confused?
No, I don't think I'm confused. Okay. I think what you're saying is like kind of what maybe I wasn't describing earlier is like I could hang there and if somebody put a weight on me while I was climbing, yeah, that would be fine if I were to stay in that same position. But then the problem is like, does it actually improve your climbing ability?
Right. And so what we want to do is we want to get better and we want to be able to grab onto smaller holds and practice more climbing. But the supra maximal loads with eccentric muscle contractions, which are like 150% of a concentric muscle contraction, like those loads are massive and we can hang with those loads, but we shouldn't expect them to transfer to the climbing wall because on the climbing wall, we're limited by how much active tension we can get. So instead of like hanging, and it doesn't mean that, again, fingerboarding protocols are a bad idea for everyone, but there's also downsides with them. There's a lot of muscle stretching that happens with eccentric loads, and the eccentric load muscle stretching is more fatiguing, takes longer to recover from. It influences subsequent workouts and their force production, right? So there are negative consequences with it. So we really want to take those things into consideration when we're choosing how we're getting our fingers stronger for the sport.
Okay. So like knowing all that, first of all, how did you come about this? Like, why did you start thinking about this? Is there some new paper or something out there?
Not really a finger training paper. Like I obviously read a lot of research papers, but I spent a bunch of money and did some private consulting with a researcher, Chris Beardsley, who's a really well-known guy. And that's all he does is do like muscle performance research. And so I've done 8 private 1-hour sessions with him, just like updating, like making sure I'm up to date with my thought process and my knowledge on muscle physiology and whatnot. And so we really took a deep dive into eccentric contractions and eccentric muscle training. And the misconception that's been around for a long time is that doing eccentric muscle work increases recruitment more than other types of muscle contractions, which is not the case. People can do more load with an eccentric, not because they're getting more recruitment, because they're getting a lot of extra passive tension in the connective tissues. And so it got me thinking with fingerboarding, like, holy shit, people can hang with monster amounts of weight off their body. But what I learned from Chris is like, we shouldn't really expect that to transfer to a sport because it's really dependent on the load. As soon as the load is removed, the adaptation or the ability to produce that much or resist that much load goes away.
So then have you changed something about how you program for people or yourself?
I'm a big fan of like doing fingerboarding regularly for my clients and myself. Just, you know, there's a plateau of recruitment that athletes will get with any sort of training intervention. And someone that has a pretty good training age, they're probably really close to that. And so they don't need a massive stimulus to keep it. They just need a little bit of a stimulus. But as we've talked about before, I usually have a lot of my clients strength train on the wall more, which is kind of built into the article that I'll write for your website that will supplement this. But I would also say that if we're trying to get like a little bit more recruitment, it probably makes more sense to isolate the finger flexors and do overcoming style isometrics, which are like kind of like we've talked about before, where you just pull with your fingers, but pulling with while eliminating the upper extremity.
So like having the weight be on the ground or closer to the floor.
The weight could be on the floor, but you probably, but if I lifted a weight off the floor, that would be an eccentric type of muscle contraction, no different than a hang. You would have to pick something that you're not going to move. So that would be like if you were measuring pulling against 100% resistance, that's more what I'm referring to.
Okay. And so how would you do that?
So like imagine standing just on like a platform or a 2x4 with a sling around it, and it's hooked to, like, I use the tension block, and you're standing vertically with your knees locked out and your elbows straight, and you're just trying to flex your fingers upwards. That's one way. Another way would be having something hooked above you and you're sitting and you're somehow blocking your elbow. So you're not just pulling with your arm, you're only flexing your finger flexors. That would be another way.
How would you block your elbow?
Just like maybe your arm's like at 90 degrees of flexion, your shoulder. So you're like, imagine like lounging over a countertop with your elbows on the countertop and the tension block is above you. And your fingers are on it, and you're flexing it towards the countertop with your fingers,
Okay.
but the countertop blocks your elbow, so you're not pulling as much.
And it's fixed, like, and it basically it's how you test people.
Yeah, it would
You
be how
have
we
these,
test
yeah.
people. Yeah. And it's, I
Okay.
mean, the testing portion is more interesting just because they get to see the numbers go up and you get to see the sets auto-regulate based on your performance, etc. But really, what it is it's just more like a analysis. I mean, maybe not really a critique of fingerboarding because fingerboarding has helped people in the past for sure get really strong, but it's more of an analysis of how we use the fingerboard and the loads that we pick and why. Where for someone that has a good training age, it makes more sense for them to try and isolate finger flexor recruitment in an active way than it is just adding more load on a fingerboard because that is not going to produce the same outcome as it would if I was working on muscular recruitment.
So I think that there's a conception that you have to have load and increasing load in order to make strength gains. So what you're saying is you would just pull with your finger flexors and that would increase the amount that you could pull, right?
Yes, for sure. And that's how recruitment works. It's like if we think about it in the context of a regular strength training set, like doing heavy pull-ups or heavy bench pressing or deadlifting, you do a movement that takes about a couple seconds, 1 to 2 seconds, and then you add a little bit of load and you do that movement again. So the way that other sports we'll see in strength training research shows increases in recruitment is by doing more first repetitions or more high quality repetitions. The typical way that we use a fingerboard now is add a bunch of weight and hang for a period of time, which is not the same thing as hitting a high level of recruitment multiple times in the same set. So if you took a 10-second hang and you chopped it in half or in thirds, now you have 3 3-second hang or 3.3-second hangs that will allow you to hit high levels of recruitment more often than it would if you just did one long continuous hang or pull, etc.
Okay. So this is sort of an aside question, but would that mean that like doing sets of more sets of three of, say, a heavy deadlift would be better than doing fewer sets of five of a heavy deadlift?
Oh yes, of course.
Okay.
Yeah, and anyone that's well like versed in strength conditioning stuff would know that. You know, if the goal with those sets is to get highest amount of force. If there's other reasons to do more volume, then 3x5 would be okay. But remember, like for rock climbing, like if we want to get our fingers stronger, like all we care about or all we should expect to transfer to the climbing wall is the recruitment.
Okay.
Because the fingerboarding load and the fingerboarding position is not always the same as climbing into the position or out of the position. So all we care about is the recruitment, not necessarily how we get it. But the way
Okay.
that we get it tends to be, we could probably do a little better in terms of getting that recruitment threshold up more often during a training set or session than we do on a fingerboard.
Okay. So how does this is there a protocol yet that you've created for people?
Yeah. So there's, and so this article I'm maybe like 3/4 of the way done. And as usual, it's fairly wordy and long, but you know, I think about doing like overcoming style isometrics, like we're describing, you know, 2 to 3 times per week. I would say 5 sets is a pretty good target, where every set has maybe 3 to 4 reps in it, but those reps are only a slow build of force to 100% effort within that 3-second time frame. Then I would suggest people rest like 5 seconds between efforts, you know, because strength training, you know, is very high intensity, but it's not that fatiguing. And so the other thing that I'm always confused by with big hang protocols is you do 10 seconds of work and 2 minutes of rest or 3 minutes of rest. That's way too much rest. There's no reason you need 3 minutes rest after 10 seconds of an effort. Mm-hmm. And so in this context, we would do, you know, 3 to 4 reps separated by maybe 3 to 5 seconds, then complete the sets on one hand, use the other hand, then rest 3 to 4 minutes, and then do the next set.
Okay. I mean, it's kind of like repeaters a little bit.
So repeaters are interesting because repeaters are, you know, some sort of intensity, right? Usually maybe like a 7-3 times 5 or 7-3 times 6 at 75% intensity. The downside of repeater protocols is they have a decent amount of muscle stretching involved with them because they have more volume. And so one of the biggest, you know, maybe things that I see with athletes that are getting injured, you know, because now for most of what I do is talk to injured climbers all day long, is, you know, we have to think about the climbing volume that we're doing in addition to the finger training. And if the finger training is we're going into it fatigued from our climbing volume, or it's influencing our climbing volume because it's fatiguing in itself, that's on the whole just digging people into a big deficit, which gets us injured. And so this particular protocol should be easy to recover from. Sorry.
No, it's okay. I'm really curious, seeing as how you do spend your days talking to injured climbers, like, is that what you're seeing, is people are just doing too much and that's why their fingers are getting injured?
Yeah, we all do too much. Like, I mean, I don't do as much now just because I don't have as much time as I used to. But, you know, as anyone in any profession knows, you know, if they talk to individuals that are participating in some endeavor, you hear a lot of the same things. And so I hear a lot of the same protocols. I hear a lot of the same exercise interventions on the climbing wall. And you hear a lot of the same things. But if we kind of put those together with the people that are getting injured, it certainly is just the total amount of things that we're doing on the fingers. And so another thing that's a big part about the article is maybe thinking about, if people are really trying to strengthen their fingers during a particular block or phase in their climbing or in their training, you know, year, they have to compromise with doing less climbing volume. Because all of that climbing volume, even if it's low intensity, well, especially if it's low intensity, those are the most fatiguing workouts. Sometimes those take 48 hours to recover from. But if we're doing a finger training workout, at which is high intensity, after an easy climbing workout, which is low intensity, that's not a very good application, because the low intensity stuff, even though it's low intensity, you're still building a bunch of metabolic waste. And that metabolic waste influences the perception of effort that goes into the finger training, and you're not going to get as much recruitment as you would if you did it at a separate time or didn't do that workout at all.
Yeah. I mean, it reminds me of the Anderson Brothers book and how that's kind of been put by the wayside, which is interesting, because in their finger training block, they're basically just finger training and not climbing at all, for probably that reason.
Right. And that would probably be okay. And I usually tell people if you think about the context of that book, it makes total sense. But a rock climber that's going to a gym 4 days a week cannot tolerate that program, because they will get wrecked. It's way too much load on your fingers, even for someone that has a really good training history. Like, there's definitely a finite amount of things we can do on the fingers until they get injured. If, you know, the climbing takes up 80% of that and we add, you know, extra finger training on top of that and it goes over our 100%, we're definitely going to get hurt. We're definitely going to get injured.
Okay. So rule number one in your book is if you want to get your fingers to be stronger, you don't do these low intensity things at the same time, like low intensity finger training and climbing.
Yeah, no, that does not make any sense. A lot of times I'll hear because I'll ask people when they go through some sort of training cycle, you know, a lot of those training cycles will start with a capacity phase and then it'll go into a strength phase, kind of like the Anderson Brothers book did. But for someone that has a training history, that's not necessary. Like all of that capacity work will actually transfer, or it will make changes to the strongest muscle fibers to make them more efficient, make them more aerobic, which makes them less forceful. So if I'm trying to go into my strength training phase and I'm building a bunch of fatigue, that makes no sense, because I want to get really strong in my fingers. Then I want to start doing things that are more specific to climbing, which is more powerful, having greater distances, etc. But the good news for most climbers out there that have been climbing for, you know, a good chunk of their life and they're kind of lifers, so to speak, it doesn't take that much time to really hit a new increase in your strength in a given training block. Maybe 2 to 3 weeks is pretty much all it would take for most people, but they have to get rid of so much damn climbing volume and they have to change how they use the walls. They got to get away from only limit bouldering or only moonboarding or doing a bunch of capacity stuff, and their strength numbers just by doing that will probably go up.
When you say strength, what kind of strength are you talking about?
So like if the goal for an experienced climber is to get some finger strength, right? That would be kind of the examples we described with just like doing some overcoming isometrics. But I would also say their climbing needs to be more strength focused, which is something we've talked about before, where they just spend more time on the climbing wall, grabbing onto small holds, but they're taking away a lot of the power between those holds. So instead of like, and I think in the article I have it written as like turning off the lights with those boards, because the way that the board problems are made are just by the people that make them, but there's no rules, you know, but in general, we can say they're all really powerful. You grab onto a hold, you jump to the next hold, you repeat that to the top. Some may be more powerful than others. But on the whole, that's not the only way to use the board. In fact, that's not why the tension board was made. The tension board was made kind of like I'm describing and was not intended to be like a board that has hard problems on it. You know, and that's like according to Will and Mike.
Yeah, what did they say? What was it intended for?
Just like we're describing, to create tension on hard positions on a climbing wall. But they didn't really intend it to be like, set a V8 problem on the tension board. And it's fun to do that, but that wasn't the real intention. But if we think about how a lot of people, overseas train their fingers, kind of the home woody is really the recipe for creating strength in the fingers, but also coordination in the fingers. So the other chunk I have in this article is, skills are important for climbing. There's no doubt about that. But grabbing onto a hold has a level of skill as well. And so if I'm only turning on the lights with those boards, the skill is very, very powerful. It's not really, I'm not spending as much time on those holds, so I'm not practicing grabbing onto small holds as much. But that's really easy to do in a strength training phase.
Yeah. So you could just use a moonboard completely differently and just grab onto the small holds at the bad angle and hold on to them for longer and do smaller moves.
For sure. And so I usually have people just climb it like a ladder. You know, the moonboards, maybe depending on the set, can be one of the harder ones because some of those holds are really hard. I think for like maybe probably that's probably one of the harder ones to do it on. I would say the tension board works really good. I would say the kilter board work is probably the easier entry point for athletes to do it on, just because there's so many, the holds are really comfortable, you know. But if a V6 climber that climbs in gym sets needs to get stronger fingers, and all they're doing is climbing V6 gym sets, they're not going to get stronger fingers, because V6 gym sets aren't that hard on your fingers, and they do a lot of volume of that. And so doing that for a really long time will, you know, zap a bunch of your power, but you're not really getting the necessary practice to grab onto small holds in that context.
Okay.
Does that make sense? So I have it written out as kind of like a, maybe a two to like, I think most people could tolerate like a 2 to 3 week strength block where they're, you know, maybe doing non-climbing strength training and they're doing climbing strength training on the wall, but they could also do some of this active recruitment finger training like we've described, you know, maybe on a, on, with their strength training, with their non-climbing strength training or after their climbing strength training, like later in the day as a double session for 2 to 3 weeks. And like the clients that I've been doing that on have been blown away at how strong their fingers have gotten by doing that.
Okay. And when you're talking about doing these finger sessions in this different way, I'm still trying to imagine, like, I understand the positions that you need to be in, but do you need, what's it called? A crane?
No. You don't need a scale for sure.
You don't?
No.
Okay. So then how do you measure progress with
it? It's going to be hard to be motivated to do it without that. Yeah. And so that's the thing. That's why people like the fingerboard, because you can add load measure and strength. We assume that that's measuring or increasing our strength, you know, but it's definitely increasing the load tolerance of the fingers. But the thing that we forget is at some point, once we've surpassed the active recruitment of our muscles, we're just adding tension to our passive tension to our connective tissues. Like I made a post this morning on doing some monos. Maybe that's a good visual for people. Mm-hmm. I never train monos. Like there's no monos around me, but I had a client that had a finger pop on a mono. And so I was like, oh, I'm going to warm up my fingers. I'm going to hang on the monos on my Beastmaker 2000. And I could do it. Like it was definitely kind of hard, but I could do it. But if I tested my fingers, my individual middle fingers, my load was 47 pounds and 48 pounds on my fingers. So there is no way that I'm producing my body weight with both middle fingers, but I can hang with both middle fingers. So how the hell can I hang with both middle fingers if I can't produce that much force, right? That's a really easy example of passive tension.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
The other thing when people think about passive tension, it definitely can be like good for the connective tissues in a strength training phase, because one thing that you would get with heavy hang protocols is some hypertrophy in the muscle. That's part of how the muscle spreads force to adjacent fibers. So when we say passive tension, imagine a muscle shortening, but there's muscle fibers right next to, or muscle fiber shortening, and there's fibers right next to it. When one muscle fiber shortens eccentrically, it loads the connective tissues laterally and at the ends of the fiber. And so there is some hypertrophy that accompanies eccentric training, but hypertrophy slows down movement speed. So the other thing that I see a lot in a performance phase is people throwing in some max weighted hangs, but that would take away power because having more lateral force transmission makes your muscle slower than it does faster. And in a performance phase, that's the exact opposite of what you want.
And when you're doing this kind of finger recruitment training, you're not having any hypertrophy?
You can get a little bit of hypertrophy for that, but significantly less. There's not hardly any muscle stretching, which is the primary mechanism where we get a lot of fatigue and inflammation and muscle breakdown is the muscle stretching. So with the isolated finger recruitment stuff, you're getting very little of that, and you're having your workouts be really easy to recover from.
Yeah, which is nice. Then you can do them, I mean, you're saying 2 times a week.
I would say for someone, like if we were talking about in season, I would say they could do like the 5 sets by 3 to 4 reps protocol a couple times per week would be fine. If it was in a strength block for a couple weeks, I'll do the climbing session twice per day sometimes, once in the morning and once at night, then rest the following day and do that 3 times a week. But and that's where it's really individual. For myself, like within 6 or 8 sessions of that, my fingers are back to their maximum strength. Which means that for a lot of my clientele that are experienced climbers and have training histories, they don't need a lot of a stimulus to get their strength to pop right back up. Then they want to start moving away from that strength phase into something that's more like normal rock climbing. But they need that normal strength phase, else their ability to produce the highest levels of force will slowly go down.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, it must not be too, like you're saying, it must not be too fatiguing if you're saying to people to do it 3 times a week.
Yeah, and like with the one thing, and I didn't describe the on the wall protocol, but like, you know, grabbing onto holds, I usually tell people to use open feet. You know, and the hardness of the holds is very individual, and so it needs to have high relative difficulty to an individual. And so depending on the angle that they're using, the hold size will, you know, be different for different athletes. But I usually tell clients that try and choose the wall angle that you're going to be spending the most time on outside. If you climb outside a lot, if you have projects outside, you know, training at 45 degrees in this methodology, for me, I can use like the 15 to 20 degree holds. They need to be in cut though on my 45. But if I'm on the 20 degree wall, the holds are like 10, 8 millimeters, 15 millimeters mm-hmm. are the biggest. And so it needs to be hard for the wall angle that you're using. But if we're on the wall for 40 to 60 seconds is kind of the time frame, and we're moving maybe 8 to 10 hand moves, it kind of is a repeater like we are familiar with on a fingerboard, but it's done on the climbing wall. And so it's giving people kind of the movement competency and body positioning stuff, but it's the focus is training their fingers.
Did you say 40 to 60 seconds on the wall and 8 to 10 hand movements?
Yeah, is an approximate, and that would be total hand movement. So, you know, 4 to 5 per hand.
Okay, because that's pretty slow, right?
It's super slow. Yeah. And so the other thing that, like, I have in the article is a lot of times people are like, that's not the same thing as rock climbing. I say, neither is fingerboarding. So if that doesn't transfer to rock climbing, why the hell should I expect fingerboarding to transfer to rock climbing, right? So, So really it's like, it's not normal climbing, but that's not the point of a strength training phase. You know, I see a lot of people in a strength training phase and they're still doing limit bouldering, which is more performance focused stuff, which has too much speed, has a lot of jumping power stuff, which is a function of their speed, but it has a lot of like risky strain type loads to the fingers. So I think the strength training phase is a perfect time to get away from those things so we can keep the injury risk low. And this is just more fun than using a fingerboard.
Yeah,
for sure. Another thing too. It's like using a fingerboard for me is boring as hell. I don't like doing it.
So if you were to do this 40 to 60 seconds, 8 to 10 hand movements, how many times would you do that and how much rest would you put in between?
So that's another, I think, one of the great things about it is if we don't change the difficulty of the sets, you'll get tired fast. So a good parallel would be thinking about doing a heavy deadlifting set or a heavy bench pressing set. Like if you're going at 85%, you're not going to be able to do that many sets. If you're doing that, you can maybe do an 8x3, but at some point your muscles are going to be tired. You're going to have to end your session, but it's not going to be a long session. So once I do a set, I'll fully recover, maybe 3 to 4 minutes, get back on the wall, do it again. It doesn't have to be the same exact path or set, but it needs to be hard still. And then as soon as I can't get to the top of the wall and I can't grab onto the small grips anymore, my session's over. That's it. Go home. You know, usually for me, when I time myself, I can, when I'm really trying hard on my 45 degree wall, I can do like a 45 minute session, like 8 to 10 sets, and my fingers are tired. You know, and so that type of work is really easy to recover from. Then I work all day, and then if I have some time, I'll go do it again. If I do it on the 20 degree wall, on my wall, I usually end the session because my fingers hurt because the holds are small and it like just more like outside. I can't do it indefinitely because my skin gets wrecked, right? Which also keeps the session pretty short.
Yeah. You said this would blow my mind, and it's blowing my mind.
Well, hopefully it's not confusing. But when it comes to the physiology, it's like it's just not simple to describe. Like there's no really easy way of saying it that doesn't use terms that maybe people aren't familiar with. Like even just saying passive and active tension, for most people, that's probably really confusing. You know, so it has to be – that's why I'm writing the article as well, so we can be a little bit more descriptive with it.
Yeah, no, that's really – it is like The terminology in the beginning is definitely confusing, especially like some people don't know what eccentric and concentric is. Do you want to just explain that in like 20 seconds, please?
Yeah. So imagine doing like your pull-up maximum. That would be a concentric movement. So your arms are straight overhead, grabbing onto a bar. As you bring your head over the bar, the angle at your elbow is getting smaller. The muscle is shortening. That is a concentric muscle contraction. Most of the forces that are produced in that context are all muscle activity. So how many muscle fibers you're activating. So that's why we use concentric movements as the one rep max, because they mimic the sport the most. If I was standing and I was flexing my fingers, and let's say I was doing a finger curl with a tension block, that would be a concentric muscle contraction. If I was going to do an eccentric pull-up, I would start with my chin over the bar and I would lower into straight elbow angles. But my forces with that are 1.5 times greater than they are with a regular pull-up maximum. But people
really?
Yeah, for sure.
Because of gravity? Crazy.
No, because of the passive tension.
Oh.
So if I was going to do what we're describing with the eccentric load on my fingers, hanging on a fingerboard is like an eccentric because I'm resisting my muscles from my joint from opening if we're doing it in a half crimp position.
Oh, you're resisting. Okay, got it.
Right. So the eccentric contraction on a fingerboard is called a yielding isometric. And then if I'm pulling on my fingers like we're describing with the block, that's an overcoming style isometric, which is more like a concentric muscle contraction.
Right.
So the reason that someone could do so much more load with a pull-up going negative is not because it's recruiting more muscle fibers. That's the old idea that needs to go away. It is because those types of movements load the connective tissues, and all of that extra passive tension is the reason they can tolerate more load.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're doing like a pull-up, let's say you're doing a heavy pull or just a bodyweight pull-up for that matter, and you're lowering slowly, you're probably only using 50% of the muscle fibers you used when you were going up because of the efficiency of the muscle fibers when you're going down.
Hmm.
And I'm sure we talked about that at some point, how doing slow eccentrics, unless they're really, 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 really heavy, are not a good use of your training time.
Seems like it's a lot of load on your tendons.
It just stretches the muscle fiber a lot, which is fatiguing, yeah. Which can influence your workouts, but it's definitely not helping you. And so That's really the maybe a explanation of the difference.
All right. I have a question for you, but I want to make sure that you get to everything that you wanted to explain.
Oh, yeah.
Do you have
sure.
anything else?
I mean, not really. People can check out the article and I will get that to you. Tomorrow, hopefully, and it'll have like some videos of the climbing drill. It'll have some videos of the testing options and has the numbers and all that kind of stuff. So it'll be a good reference for people to look at as well.
Okay. Yeah. Thanks for writing that up. So I want to just do like sort of a case study here in our last few minutes. So let's just take Allison Best because she's basically famous now because of you and her numbers. And I'm just curious, like, what you would tell her to do. Does that make sense? Or do you think that would be useful at all?
Probably not for people because her numbers are so outrageous and her ability to produce passive tension is so amazing. I mean, my suggestion for her was you don't need to train your fingers ever, pretty much. They're always, like, she does all these amazing feats of strength, but that's just because she has the ability to do it. You know, where what the suggestion for her would be, and what I do with a lot of clients that I do testing with is at some point your fingers are plenty strong. You definitely don't need to be wasting your time using a fingerboard. You know, you definitely want to, you know, use like the general idea that everyone needs to use a fingerboard for some profound reason doesn't really exist in my opinion, with maybe the exception of the warm up routine, but maybe like, probably a climber maybe that's done some finger training in their past and they're climbing and their finger like strength has plateaued, you know, might be a better case study just because they're probably doing a lot of extra stuff, too much stuff, and they're not recovering from it. You know, like if regardless of what we do, if we don't recover from it, it's not going to help. You know, it's really confusing to see the things that are the most hard on the muscles are the easiest things that we do more of, which is really confusing. Like even simple things like arc training, they still stretch the muscles. They still influence the elbow, tendons. You know, they still like are fatiguing even though they don't feel very hard. We probably need 2-3 days to recover from those workouts. But because they don't feel very hard, people just do a heavy finger training session right after. The accumulation of that fatigue will catch people, it will catch up to us.
Okay. I mean, it seems like the main gist of what you're saying is do this different kind of finger protocol because it's less fatiguing, but also do less in your training.
Absolutely.
Or different.
Absolutely. And have a focus with like your training cycles, you know, and people love fingerboarding and they love their max protocols. And so in the article I have as well, like if people want to do those protocols, that's they're probably not at risk of using them. However, you would only want to use those during like a strength training phase. But as soon as your strength training phase is over, where you're using like a traditional heavy hang, you need to use a different type of finger training protocol to make sure that the fatigue is reduced with your training. And you could easily replace that with something that has more isolated recruitment protocol like we described. So people could still do their heavy hangs. I don't think they're necessary for most experienced climbers, but they could still do them and then they should transfer away from them. But they definitely don't need to be doing them during a performance phase.
Okay.
Like it doesn't make any sense to go to the crag and try really hard on your project and then go home later and do some heavy hangs. That makes no sense. Hmm. It's not doing anything other than making you feel good about yourself, which is important, I guess, but physiologically is not helping.
So the most popular, one of the most popular blog posts of all time on Training Beta is your simplest finger training protocol. And I'm wondering if you have second thoughts about that protocol knowing this.
I would probably change some of the density hang stuff, at least for the strength phase, where I think that protocol works good for like connective tissue health because it adds a lot of stress to the connective tissues, which in that context is a good thing, is health promoting for the connective tissues. But when it comes to a strength block, I would, in that article, we have the recruitment pulls, but the recruitment pulls were pulling with your whole upper extremity. I would probably change those now to having them be finger flexor isolated active recruitment pulls, taking away the big muscles. But it also depends on the athlete, where someone that's relatively new to climbing and they don't have a lot of, you know, pulling experience or upper body strength, maybe having the upper body cooperate is a good thing for them. But for a lot of experienced climbers that use it, I would probably isolate the finger flexors. But the velocity stuff I love still, for sure. I still suggest that. But that's kind of another power phase.
Okay. So much to think about.
But maybe I'll revise that at some point. I think this will maybe speak for itself. But now that you're bringing that up, maybe I will make a bit of a revision at the same time. I'm going to have to change some of the formatting, but
we're always revising our training techniques in climbing, huh?
I know, it's true. It was like, and that's why I, you know, did this like 8 hours of education for myself is, you know, like I'm busy enough now with work that I don't have as much time as I used to read research papers. And you just physically can't keep up with all of them. It's just not possible for anyone unless you're someone like Chris, who that's his job. That's all he does all day long. And so if there's anything that needs to be known about or is that interesting or new about muscle physiology, like he knows. And so it was very cool for me to just like be the student and listen to him and take shit tons of notes. And it's been like, Jesus, I think it was like maybe a month and a half ago where I did that. And I have like these 4 8.5 by 11 pieces of paper, 8 columns of them taped up in my office with all the notes from those calls. So I've just been like going through and just like learn, you know, making sure I'm like up to date with all this stuff. So it's been really cool. So I'm, you know, shout out to that dude. He's a really knowledgeable, awesome guy.
Chris Beardsley, is that what you said?
Chris Beardsley, yeah. And a lot of people that will listen to this maybe have heard of his name, but he's a researcher from the UK. But really, really nice and just like really smart guy and, you know, obviously very knowledgeable about his profession.
Yeah. So I know you have to go, but basically, like, you've been doing this with your clients and with yourself, and you've been seeing really good results with it.
Yeah, I have a couple, like, you know, what I would consider really high level climbers, like 514 climbers that, you know, had either sore fingers or they have plateaus in their performance and they're looking for like something to do that's not just like the, you know, because when people do a hang max hang protocol, they do like 5 sets of like 10 seconds with like 3 minutes rest. Like that's not that much volume at all. You know, and all of the extra load that you're doing is passive tension. So you're not getting that much recruitment out of that if you keep doing it over and over and over. And so for those athletes, I've had them switch to a dedicated 2 or 3 week strength phase just on the climbing wall. And their numbers went, I think one of the athletes, Joel's peak force went up like 30 pounds just by doing that, not even using a fingerboard. And he's a really well-trained athlete as well. Like, you know, climbs 514, boulders V12, like really strong athlete. And, you know, it's a different stimulus, of course, but it gives people the okay, let's say, to stop doing so much climbing stuff. Because everyone's so anxious about making their fingers stronger, but at the same time, it's maybe not the protocol that they're using, but it's just all of the climbing stuff that they're doing that's taking away the gains they would have gotten if they would just do less stuff. So the reason I like the on-the-wall protocol is it's naturally really short. And people just got to, you know, if people really want to increase their performance, they have to take that and, like, put their ego away. And you don't get to do as much climbing for a few weeks. And it'll definitely work, but you just got to have, you know, people trust in the process.
Yeah. Last question, then I promise I'll let go. But after those sessions that you described on the wall, do you tell them to do like 1 day rest, 2 days rest, three?
I think with the strength session, 1 day total off is fine. That's, I mean, like I said, I do a couple sessions in the same day.
Oh, right.
And sometimes I'll do two on, one off. So it really depends on the athlete. But for someone that has a good training experience, you know, doing that 4 times a week is not that hard.
All right.
Physiologically is not that hard on them, but it would be really productive.
Yeah, that sounds great. I'm excited to try this, actually.
Yeah,
okay, I'm going to let you go.
Okay, yeah, I'll send you.
You have like a client right What's now, that? Right? You have a client like no, right no, no, now, no. right?
I think it's it's on. It's well, I do, but it's on Zoom, so I can get on quickly. But yeah, thanks for having me again. Nice to see you.
Yeah, thank you so much. And thanks for doing all this research and like spending your own money to just like keep everybody informed. So thank you.
Yeah, of course. No, it's great. I like have a passion for it for myself and I want to stay updated. So we all should do it together.
Yeah. All right. Have a good one, Tyler.
Cool. Yep, you too. Have a nice day.
All right. I hope you enjoyed that interview with Dr. Tyler Nelson. Again, you can find him at C4HP on Instagram. And then if you wanted to work with him or just talk with him about this stuff more, he does consultations remotely, and you can find that at campforhumanperformance.com. He also does classes in person and some online, and he also sees people in his clinic. So if you're in the Salt Lake area, and a lot of times people will just go there to work with him. So again, all of that's at campforhumanperformance.com. So in this interview, he mentioned an article that he was writing, and he did end up writing it. We did publish it on Training Beta in the blog, and it can be found at trainingbeta.com/fingerboard-limits. But I also put it in the show notes, so you can find it there. Or if you just go to Training Beta, you can just search Tyler Nelson, and the limits of the fingerboard for finger strength training will show up. That's what it's called. And I found it really helpful, actually, because this one was kind of hard for me to follow. just because he uses certain words that I'm not really familiar with. And so it's hard for me to imagine things, but he's got like videos and photos and everything in there so that you can really clearly understand what he was saying. So thank you very much, Tyler, for doing that and for everything else that you do. I think that's it for today. I'm just going to let you think on that. You can find everything that we do at Training Beta at trainingbeta.com. We have tons of programs for you. We also have personal coaching for you and my nutrition services. And you can find us at Training Beta on Instagram. So thanks for listening all the way to the end. I very much appreciate you, and I'll talk to you next week.